the presentation, we have death in a gallery. We have come just to observe what we are doing here. The air personnel of the University of Carthage in Heidelberg. I hope we are getting by some of that work. Good morning. You are welcome to Parliament. This is a portfolio committee on communication. We are dealing with the Freedoms and Publications Amendment Bill. In the House here, we have the committee, Communications Portfolio Committee, and we have stakeholders, those who are in the sector. They are making their presentations, in terms of what they think will make the bill the proper one at the time when we amend it. So we're just receiving those presentations, but the process of the department, we still have to engage with the community, with everybody else, and then table it into Parliament. Very soon we'll table the bill in Parliament. So we're just engaging on their views. Is multiple choice here?
Yes, we are, Chairman.
You look like a big delegation. What we have to do is to introduce ourselves, because we have introduced everybody from the members' side. But as a stakeholder present, you make your own introduction. Thank you very much. Over to you. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but you can introduce yourself.
Thank you, Senator. Honorable Humphrey Matagwan, members of the committee, colleagues in the sector, the FPD, the DOC, and the prisoners in the gallery. Good morning to you once more. Chairperson, we wish to thank you for the opportunity to be making this oral submission to you. Before I already introduce my team, allow me just to take you through what we have before you in our deck of slides. In our deck of slides, Chair, you will find the slides. At the back, we have two documents. The first document is an executive summary of our submission. What the executive summary seeks to achieve is to capture in a nutshell what our submission are in this process. The key and the salient issues of our submissions are reflected in that executive summary. It gives you a good picture of what our concerns are and what our proposals are. The second document, chairperson, members of the committee, are extensive drafting proposals that we are making to the committee. Chair members will be happy to know that we have not come here to raise concerns, but we are also here to offer possible solutions. We hope that these drafting proposals will assist you as you go out for deliberations in the next 2 weeks or so. With that, Chair, introducing my team, my name is Tim Ntengenya, and I'm the General Manager, Regulatory and Public Affairs at MultiChoice, based in Johannesburg. Next to me, we've got Ms. Wendy Rosenberg. Wendy is a director at the Law Firm Investments Attorneys, no speaker to this committee. We've carried up for the last 17 years. And then next to Wendy, we've got Enon Don, who's the head of our policy and the group. Enon is based here in Cape Town, interacts with the members of the committee fairly often. And then we've got Bruce Keith, also joining us, the head of compliance. allow me to join the chorus of the submission that has come before you and indicate upfront that I must try to absolutely support the objectives that the committee department seeks to achieve with this proposal, particularly as they promote informed consumer choice that is very, very critical, but more so as they seek to protect children from harmful content. Those are absolutely non-negotiable. We are also excited, Chairperson, that this bill seeks to extend that protection to the online environment. These are really pragmatic and very important objectives, but Chairperson, we just want to caution that all of this would come to nothing if the bill firstly is not constitutional. And I think, Chair, we have received lots of input around constitutional issues, and we won't belabor the point, but we stick to the report that CTV has put forward to you, what the Southern Constitution Forum has put forward to you, and what the SABC has just presented to you, and caution just on the constitutional issues. And the CTV will take you back in time and reflect on some of the cases involving the FCB in particular, where the bill, despite that they have made the case, it went to the President and Constitutional as it was then back in 2006 under the Department of Home Affairs, and the President said he had to send back to the committee. He has done that. I think it's very, very critical. But most of Chairperson, we need to make sure that the bill is workable, it needs to be practical. We appreciate that the FPB, the DNA of the FPB is located in a different time, in a different era. Back in the 70s, and then there's been some incremental amendments to the bill, just to the act. At some stage, time will come when we need to fundamentally look at legislation that comprehensively deals with today's environment. The bill, of course, needs to be effective, and some of the submissions that we're making, a clear drafting proposal at the end, talk to trying to make the deal very effective. Of course, we can have the good deal, but this is not capable of implementation, monitoring, and enforcement. And then that also does not help, because it does not address the objective that we want to do. We want to propose to the committee that it would become very respect if the deal, once part of becomes a law as a team, be held up in endless litigation, because some of the provisions are either unconstitutional or they are not enforceable. We talked to that point. So just in a nutshell, Chair, the overview of the submission, we'll talk about the Constitution, and we'll urge the committee to make a bill more effective and more enforceable. We raise the issue that the mandate of the Film and Publications Board must be the one that speaks to complement other legislation legislators, not one that seeks to duplicate or even better for that matter with those other mandates. And we can raise this in the context of CASA, which other submissions have made before, and also we raise it, of course, in the face of ongoing development at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development with regards to hate speech or legislative legislation is being used in. We also join our colleagues in the sector in asking the committee to make sure that not only do we retain the food broadcasting exemption in the Act, but that the same is extended to the ancillary broadcast material of the state broadcaster that is subsequent to having been shown on TV is also shown online. We then try to make suggestions about the need to make sure that the extension of the protection to an online environment is in a focused and an effective way, in a workable way. And I think the SABC is going to deal with that. There's so much that is uploaded on online this day. I mean, we need to make sure we focus now the scope of the people that we target those that are being done for commercial purposes, or those where the public that is for electoral protection. So we talked about it a little bit, and then of course last week just talked about uniform protection for domestic and foreign citizens. With that, Chairperson, allow me to please ask Gwen if we deal with the constitutional issues.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members of the committee. So the inevitable starting point must be the constitution, because it is our ultimate legal standard and the ultimate test. And constitutional issues are not new to the Bonds and Publications legislation. Of course, this particular legislation is new to this committee, having moved over from Home Affairs. But we thought it might be useful to reflect on some of the constitutional issues or challenges which have faced Bonds and Publications legislation before. And in 2006, there was a Bonds and Publications Amendment Bill, which similarly sought to regulate broadcasting and was in fact sent back by the President for constitutional reasons, particularly Section 190 of the Constitution. This committee is no doubt familiar with the Media Act and the REA judgment, where the Constitutional Court declared some provisions of the Act unconstitutional. And in fact, we recognise that one of the aims of this bill is specifically to implement provisions of the Media SA judgment, and we commend that effort. Our concern, though, is that those constitutional principles need to run through the bill as a whole. And the challenge that we face is that any prior classification of content limits freedom of expression in everything. And so our constitutional court has made it very clear that any prior classification should be an absolute last resort. It really should be the last step, where no other options are available. And it seems to us that a major mind shift is required so the Act does not fall foul of the Constitution again. And as Clevy said, we really want to make constructive suggestions so that we end up with legislation that is clear, effective, and appropriate, and no more restrictive than necessary to achieve its legitimate purpose. To reflect very briefly on the mandate of Forms and Publications legislation and the Forms and Publications Board, we of course face many, many challenges, and the internet is not short of any problems or difficulties. But our submission is that the Forms and Publications legislation must complement other legislation. We had other speakers this morning who mentioned how useful the Equality Court has been and Human Rights Commission, and our submission is that each legislation must focus on its particular area of specialty, and the Forms and Publications legislation should focus on its particular area and complement other legislation. As one example, we know the Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill addresses hate speech by any means whatsoever, including social media and online. And it is our submission that matters such as hate speech should be dealt with in specialist legislation such as that bill. And similarly, the Forms and Publications Board should complement other institutions, such as the Human Rights Commission, the Equality Court, the ICASA. And that allows each regulator to specialise in its field and to use its resources effectively and without creating confusion or forum shopping or duplication of resources. So a lot has been said about broadcasting, and this is a particular area where we are concerned that the Forms and Publications Board should complement rather than better a cast discussion. And that imperative comes directly from Section 190 of the Constitution, which requires one and only one independent authority to regulate broadcasting in the public interest, and that regulatory authority is a ICASA. And so any attempt to regulate broadcasting to any other body is unconstitutional. And we would really wish to avoid repeating a situation where the bill is sent back by the President because it infringes constitutional provisions. We understand, of course, the committee's concerns and its objective and the challenge of looking at the definition of broadcasting in the light of convergence. But our submission, as I said, the FABC mentioned this morning, is that there is a broadcasting policy and legislative process which is underway and which will look critically at the definition of broadcasting in the light of convergence and will determine the scope of broadcasting. And this very committee will deal with that consultation issue. So really our submission is that it's an important issue that this is not the correct legislation. This bill should not preempt that process. So there's three specific provisions in the bill which relate to broadcasting and which we submitted in June, so in a way it is not permissible. We're all aware of the exemption of which applies to broadcasting licensees and especially broadcasting services. And there are three provisions in Section 17, sorry, plus Section 7, 8, and 9 of Section 18. The first suggests that streaming content through the internet is not announced to broadcasting. The last submission that the bill may not dictate what is or isn't broadcasting. Broadcasting is defined in the Electronic Communications Act and will be amended in due course through the Quality and Legislative Review process. The second provision in the bill is Section 18A, which provides that a party effectively may not issue or renew a broadcasting license to a broadcaster or to stream content through the internet unless that broadcaster is registered as a distributor with the FCC. This encroaches on ICASA's discretion and excesses its discretion and infringes Section 192 of the Constitution, and we submit it is not permissible to limit ICASA's discretion to issue or renew a broadcasting license in this manner. In addition, the bill proposes that the broadcasting exemption will not apply to broadcasters streaming content through the internet. Our view is that in fact the opposite should apply. To the extent that a broadcaster has already broadcast content on the broadcasting service and then merely redistributes that content online, it is a natural extension of the broadcasting service, and the broadcasting exemption should apply to those ancillary services online. And it's really the same approach as is being suggested to print media in terms of the Section 16 exemption, where it really is just extending it to the online environment. And I think an important consideration there is to say to myself, well, what is the regulatory need? Why do we need to regulate content which has already benefited from regulatory protection? And in the broadcasting context, both the ICASA and the CCSA code of conduct kind of protect broadcasting viewers, including children, from harmful content. So that the content which is being distributed on what are typically referred to as catch-up services online has already benefited from those regulatory protections, and therefore it unnecessary to require broadcasters to classify films which already benefit from that broadcast protection. And we submit that if broadcasters are merely distributing online films which they broadcast, then they shouldn't have to register as online distributors or classify those films again for online distribution.
I think what comes right here through from holding on from the legal aspects which you've already raised is that we've got to really avoid, when we move into the online environment, there are already codes of conduct in place, put in place by ICASA and ICSA, which protects broadcasting viewers, including children, from harmful content. It's unnecessary to require the broadcaster to classify those forms when they already benefit from broadcast protection. And then as Wendy indicated, we shouldn't then have to register as online distributors or classify those forms online distribution. And so that's very similar to print media, where they were requesting in the presentation previous to you that the exemption which exists already for print be lifted to the online, similarly for broadcasting, the same exemption that exists already broadcasting should be also lifted to the online environment. As we move into a new digital era, we as MultiChoice support the uniform protection against harmful content based on the need to ensure protection of children, but that it should be rather, it should be focused on the content rather than the distribution medium. If we look at films and publications globally, the laws around the principles of classification have been around since the 1970s, and even though in South Africa, post the shift to new democracy in 1996, we amended the legislation to develop a more democratic form of publication board. It still was constructed around bricks and mortar world. It hadn't taken into consideration the shift into online. Indeed, it was only really post-1996 that we really saw the dramatic growth in the internet, not just as a communications media, but also as a distribution of content by not only the major media houses, but by also smaller players, and as well as that the individual. suddenly became a publisher as well. So there's been a dramatic change in the last 10 years around the internet. And the act itself, we should constantly tweak to apply to the online environment, simply because of the huge amount of content that is available. The slide we put up, I know the ISPA put up very nice internet minute yesterday, and they also put up a rather global figures. It would also be useful to look at a slide that highlights just how many South Africans are using these platforms. If we look at Facebook alone, 13 million South Africans are currently online, 7.4 million on Twitter, 8.28 million on YouTube, and 2.68 million on Instagram. So we've seen a dramatic change on how people are interacting on social media platforms, which wasn't there previously. If we look at the next slide, we just want to highlight, if you think about the number of the millions of content that's been posted every day, and you look at the total number of classified material that's being dealt with by the FPD, it's obviously much, much smaller. If you look at the, it's now around about 2,150 in a period of a year, as opposed to millions which are happening almost daily. Moving on to the next slide, that's the point we're trying to make, is that in the online environment, what worked in bricks and mortar fields, where you didn't have converged media, you still had a situation where you had discrete media platforms, such as TV and radio, delivering to a specific device, radio or television. You're now living in an era where that content is no longer just on the TV or the radio. Radio's on TV. TV's on the phone. We're moving into a converging environment, and legislation needs to acknowledge that. So there's more video content available. People are watching it. A good example of just one of our companies in the group, Showmax, which is a video on demand player, they currently have a catalogue of over 15,000 hours of content available for viewing. So you can imagine if you were to apply the old bricks and mortar way of classifying content, that the classified as the FPD, we would be here for years just to deal with the content. And in a rapidly moving dynamic field that we are in today in the IPD business, you've got to move on a daily basis. You've got to shape and adapt, be flexible. And you can't wait for content to be classified over periods of months or years because you lose your competitive advantage, especially for smaller players as well as national businesses such as MultiChoice. We're competing against global powerhouses such as Netflix. We cannot delay getting our content classified. So the bill proposed regulating any distribution by any person of any content, and then we're really talking massive amounts. This is not just the media houses. The sheer mass of that online content is going to make it unworkable to extend the act as proposed in the bill. It's going to be impossible to implement, monitor, or enforce. It will be ineffective and unworkable. So our proposal is that when you apply this, it should not be applied to all content that's on the internet. The registration and classification obligation should apply only to distribution which is for remuneration, where someone presented yesterday for commercial purposes. And more importantly, by distributors who have editorial responsibility or control over the selection and organization of that content. A reform of the Act, which you as the committee members will be doing, should identify what is the purpose of the FPD, what content needs to be classified, who should do it. Just because of the sheer volume, if we look at trends globally within governments, they talk about governments steering, not rowing. And similarly, it's something that the FPD should consider, that they should be steering rather than trying to row this huge boat with massive amounts of content, more rather than a daily basis. And they should be looking at how they can manage self-classification schemes, which have also been suggested by a number of presenters. If they need to focus, then they should focus on the higher level of classification, such as X18 and higher, and content that could be refused classification. And the third element, in addition to those, is who has responsibility for breach of the guidelines. So as we move into this era of massive amounts of content available, the FPD itself should be adapting, becoming flexible and dynamic, and moving away from looking at doing the classifying itself, but allowing companies and industries to set up self-classification regimes.
Thank you, Aaron.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Member. So I will deal with slide from 15 to 20. I will be focusing mainly on the regulation of online distributors that like the on-demand services and public broadcasting services. So it's more specific. So we must comment also, just as we indicated earlier, the initiatives by the, by the committee and also by the FPB. About 2 years ago, the FPB recognized that the current legislation has limitations, in particular when it comes to regulation of online content. The FPB then approached the industry because the way the video on demand services were mushrooming at the time, and that is when our income arrangements for classification of content, as anyone indicated previously, because the shared volume of those of the content provided by those services, the current legislation is very limited and is not catered for those. So currently, the online distributors are self-classified. It's an arrangement between the FPB and the industry. The classification of self-classification, which is the current arrangement, is working well. Through our video demand services, we have noticed that it's very quick, it's effective, and also achieves the purpose. And more importantly, the arrangement for self-classification by the online distributors has also created jobs. The industry has had to employ some of the classifiers which were previously employed by the FPD. Because of the nature of the way that they are rotated, they were available, they were not within the time, so they were employed by some of the industry distributors. So they were also trained by the FPD. And because they applied the standards that the FPD had set, so there was no compromise of the FPD standards in classification. So that is commendable. We recommend that the bill should repeat that arrangement, and therefore the bill should recognize the self-classification by the online distributors. Our concern, Chair, with the current provision is that Section 18C of the bill proposes the introduction of classification by industry body. We are worried that that arrangement basically what it does is that it substitutes the FPD for the new body by the similar arrangement by the same arrangement where the distributors will provide public content to that body for classification. So what the interim arrangement is trying to avoid will be introduced through the bill. So what we recommend that the bill should include the current classification model and the same arrangement where the FPD still retains the oversight and regulation on the process. Again, another encouraging provision in the bill is that Section B recognizes the need to regulate foreign distributors, in particular the recognition of foreign classification systems. We support that, Chair. We support that the domestic and foreign organizations should be equally accountable. And if you are should be protected in the same way, whether the distributor is based locally in South Africa or is outside South Africa. But we are also proposing a new provision that the prohibition for distribution of online sort of offline content without registration should specifically apply to as well. The requirement for distribution, classification, and warning in the bill, we also recommend that should apply in the same way to a person who either is in South Africa or the distributor who's outside South Africa, where the content is marketed and is also received by South African viewers. Moving along, Section 18D in the bill recognizes the need to approve foreign classification systems. In other words, the content that is provided by the foreign distributor, which is spread into South Africa, would have been previously classified outside South Africa, would be recognized. But the bill currently, the provisions do not provide any guidelines. We are of the view that it is necessary for those guidelines to be provided. Those that will ensure the uniformity, consistency, and transparency. We recommend that that can be done through the regulations. In other words, the regulations can be prescribed where the FPP in fiscal those regulations will be a sufficient consultation with the industry and look at what would be required for those what need to be achieved. But also, sir, we recommend that people should also recognize that that should be done on a fiscal basis. We know that, that the FPP has, for example, the MOU with the Chemical Classification Filling Association Board, and that kind of interaction between the FPP and other foreign schools is common and should be recognized in terms of the B. But we also recognize that the different jurisdictions apply different levels of classification based on the culture depending on the culture. In our submissions, we made an example of our filling, the subsidy. In South Africa, it was provided rated as fitting the VL. In the US, the classification is 17, which is up, whereas in the UK, it's 15. Again, both differences are informed by the prevailing circumstances and cultural differences in those countries. So we propose that be that kind of punishment where there is a philosophical recognition of classification between those countries. Chair, the other concern that we raised in our submission and we raised it again today is the requirements that are in the current legislation, which was simple superimposed in the online environment where it may not work. In particular, the requirements that the distributors should reflect labels on their websites or the display classification and beginning of more specific way it should be done. The online environment is different, simply because of the nature of the technology that you are using, the software system that are applicable, but also the nature of how the viewer receives the content. It may be, for example, an online environment you may receive it through your computer or if it is a device as small as a cell phone. So the requirement about the size of the logo, the size of the restrictions and warning may not apply. Again, we are recommending one that those requirements must remain, but they must be outcome-based. In other words, the reason really for those requirements for warning is to inform the viewer. So our view is that the bill should be very broad in terms of what is required. The FPP may then have an opportunity to give more guidance through regulations if necessary. And the next one is just on the appropriate enforcement measures. So we, I think, have also already indicated the problem that we have with the definitions. They are not wide. Those, the effect of that, of the problem with definition also comes through in section B and E. Because the requirements are too wide, it's difficult to enforce. What we really recommend is that we require that the bill must be enforceable. And if you look at section A, by way of example, there's a reference to a complaint about the services being offered online by any person. In other words, what will happen is that the FPP will receive a lot of complaints about anything. We propose that the definitions be very streamlined and be in line with the mandate of the FPP to avoid those kind of undesirable consequences. And that is said, we also must comment what Frank happened in particular with the FPP when it comes to additional measures. It is pointless to have a bill and regulations on enforcement if the community of privacy protect is not informed. There is a tremendous work done by the government in particular in terms of educating the community or the industry and the receiver of our people. Those awareness and educational campaigns should be recognized legally and should be promoted. We also recommend that there must be industry codes. The bill should recognize industry codes who are responsible for the use of content and also the steps that the consumer must take in the event of non-compliance. And lastly, from my side, to assist the consumers, we also recommend that the FPP or the Queen Health Inquiry, the FPP, to have a list of the registered distributors who comply with the requirement by the FPP and those who are not registered. That will also assist the FPP in enforcement, in particular if you identify a rogue distributor who has not registered in order to protect the consumers who made them and also compete with the FPP. I'm handing over to you.
Certain, you really indulged us, we appreciate that. I'm not going to go through the concluding remarks because they really reinforce the point and the proposal that I will be making for you and members of that committee. And once more, just to appreciate the time for it. We'll be available for questions and we'll probably around when we deliberate in the next 2 weeks, should you wish to. Any clarity on some of what information is available. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Paul's choice. Members, can we have a seat? Honorable Takana.
Thank you, Chair. I thought that I will be quiet until the hearings are done, but I have to check for this because time I speak on this. But some of the questions regarding this, maybe I will push to the TV. But here I just want to check one of them with the multi-person. I understand, but let me start saying that for your recommends co-regulation between EAS and FPE as an alternative to complement Section 192 of the Constitution, thus mitigating possible enforced encroachment on EAS as well. Number two, the use of co-regulation as a means to enforce compliance. And maybe you will recall yesterday that one of the representatives from the gaming sector gave an overview of financial implication of the deal to that sector. What are the financial and economic implications of the deal to the broadcasting sector in this one? I just want to pause here, but I've got many questions, but I think they are going to be not a multi-first, but they were challenged by multi-first. Thank you.
Thank you very much, member. Can we have a response before the three questions?
Chairperson, I'll also allow any of my team members to engage if they so wish. And the reason the relationship between the FPP and the car Chairperson, these are state categories. Their money, their cars, their functions are etched in their respective farming legislation. We need to be fiscally very, very clear and keep those money absolutely very, very clear about the point that we've been making. To an extent that there are issues where there could be joint interest. Of course, they can interact, but most importantly, that interaction needs to be open, needs to be transparent. And we know that recently there were links afoot between ICAS and the FPP to enter into a memorandum of understanding. Those kind of developments need to be open, to be transparent, and they need, of course, to respect the spirit of the respective mandate which they get from the from their respective legislation. With regards to self-regulation and the financial implication, Chairperson, as we indicated, of course, I mean, when we enter into the what we call distributors license with the FPD, it is an annual license fee that is payable. If I'm not mistaken, month, but it can take us to a million every year. Of course, this could also be quite burdensome. The one thing that DL does not seek to address is really the funding of the FPD. Because, I mean, you know, there might be a tendency to get as many of those distribution licenses as possible in order to be able to generate revenue for FPDs. Because those licenses fees, they accrue to the FPD's pockets, and the FPD actually uses that for their own operations. This is different from what happens with ICADA, where we pay annual license fees as well as that. And those fees go straight into the fish trust, and they get black appropriation from the fish trust. With the FPD, I mean, no doubt, I mean, because of the work that they do, there needs to be an arrangement with regards to their funding. But we're very concerned that, I mean, you know, it might help distributors in the long run if they pay this huge fee. Folks, I mean, is there anything I'm missing?
I think maybe just to add to one point is, as previously indicated, the statutory bodies have very specific purposes and functions and why they're put in place. Section 192 specifically requires the statutory institution to be put in place for broadcasting. It doesn't say who the statutory body will be, but through legislation, Parliament has indicated that body be CASA and has put in place the mechanisms in how it will implement its mandate. And that mandate is very different to that of the FPV. ICASA doesn't pre-classify content that comes onto a broadcaster's platform, because that would infringe on freedom of expression and freedom of speech, which are principles which are constitutionally guaranteed. And those are specifically put in place from in a constitution to protect from what occurred before 1994. Whereas the FPV comes from a very different mindset, either pre-classification. So the way the legislation has been established should say that adults in our society should be provided with guidelines so they can make informed choices to protect our children. Connect as the content gets pre-classified. As you've heard from many people, some of that pre-classification should be done by the bodies or by industry bodies, depending on the size of the industry. And that purpose is very specific to classification. ICASA is not about classification, it's about once you've broadcast, if you've gone against your code of conduct, you will be punished. So it's go forth, put your message out, but if your message is an incorrect one, you're going to be attracting fines for putting out something incorrect. Whereas the other one is a pre-classification one. So the function is very different. No regulation, I would say, in that case, in response, would not be a very good way to go about it, because you would have a tension between two very different objectives for statutory bodies.
Thanks. Another
question, Dan. Thanks, Jefferson. I also think a lot of my questions are for the FPB, but I suppose we'll have an opportunity to discuss with them once the hearing is done. Thanks, Dr. Joyce, for that great presentation. I think you've given us a lot of information to think about and mull over as a committee. There were two salient points for me. The one, the fact that the bill, certain sections of the bill are likely unconstitutional and would likely be challenged in courts and amount to litigation. I know that the FPB or the Department of Communication can deal with it. And then you also mentioned that the bill was unworkable. The FPB never has the money or the staff capacity to make sure that this bill is workable. There's content in the millions on social media, on YouTube, and on the internet. So the FPB actually does not have the capacity to implement the bill. And then you also mentioned that there's currently a system of staff classification, which I think is a great one because it's in line with what is happening in print media. Can you just indulge us and explain a little bit about how the staff classification works so that we have that information with us?
Thank you, Chen. Basically, that's, I think the context would have. So in the past, obviously, because the current legislation was really meant for motion print kind of environment, where the video shot service content or films to the board for classification, and you wait for a period of time and transfer. And because of the nature of that environment, the number of titles that have to be classified is very limited. In an online environment, like as Aidan indicated already, for example, this video at Showmax has thousands and thousands of of content, of hours of content that has to be classified. That would be impossible to be done if we were to send that to a people for classification. And also the nature of content is online. So what the FEB did in cognition of that limitation was to enter into an arrangement with those online distributors. Firstly, to enter into an agreement where the all classifiers will be trained by FEB, will then, once it's been trained, will use the classification provided by the FEB in order to classify. So in other words, it's an in-house classification system by your own employees, but who will have to comply with all FEB requirements. But moreover, once you have classified, the factors that have been classified before have been registered, this is to the FEB. The FEB retains the right, the regulator wants to question any of those classifications, they may object to, they may also have to, they may require you to account for their classification. It has worked well, and particularly around the turnaround times, and that the FEB at any time intends that authority to regulate that environment.
Thank you very much. You may realize that we are close to an hour now of our choice. So we'll give you more time than others. Because of the interest on what you were saying, well, of like others. But that's the end of the session with our choice. But what I like most with you is your 50-50 in your delegation. It's unlike up here in the boys' club, then there is the 50-50. But 50-50, you know, I thought we are a thank you very much, and go on with the time. Keep us informed. Thanks a lot. We are not going to call South African Research Forum. I'm told Mr. Manus is here. Not Molus, Manus. Moalus. Mr. Pomin made this one. Moalus. Moalus. Thank you very much. And then one of the presentation, you will take a through. And the members will take notes. Thank you very much. You again, you have been registered so that we call your name proper. Thanks for watching.
My name is Jim Wadis, I'm the Secretary General of the South African National Editors Forum. As the South African National Editors Forum, we are members of the South African Press Council and we are bound by the press codes of the council itself. And we have had several interactions with the FTP on this issue. And our main gist of the argument is that the bill, what we that the FEA bill that's been proposed of the Act itself is should include online media. At the moment with the FBT that especially section 16 of the FEA is to exclude newspapers and magazines published by a member or a body that is recognized by the press ombudsman. Such a body, of course, is the Press Council of South Africa, which is a body that is now defined in the new proposed definition. The term does not find its way into the proposed amended section 16. We are also viewed that the online decision that members of the Press Council wish to be exempt in terms of section 16 of the FDA does not constrain within the current definitions of the newspaper in the end of the proposed new definition of magazine in the FEA bill. Consequently, we propose that amendments to section 16 of the bill be further amended to read as follows, that any person may request in the prescribed manner that the publication, other than a publication that is published by a member of the Press Club of South Africa, and which member subscribes and appears to a code of conduct that must be enforced by that body, and other than advertisement that falls within the jurisdiction of the ASA of South Africa, which is distributed in the public, is classified in terms of discretion. So the next important step for us as summit is that there is to make considerable amendments. We call on the committee or the proposed existing definition of publication in the Act. And in the respect of the proposed amendments, there to contain the FPA. Because Chair, as the Act and the FPA, they classify us as print. But what we've been going through and what we have is we've got multi-platforms. We can no longer have a singular and sole view that the definition is only newspapers or television. Whether it's newspapers or television, we now operate businesses that are multi-platform and that's digital content. That's why whether this can be video, it can be audio clips, it can be multimedia. That's why all these digital platforms, much as we as newspapers and the media, we subscribe to the Press Council and guys like your ENC, AETV, SABC, would obviously subscribe to the BCCSA code. We subscribe to the South African Press Council, and we also say within our media houses, we also have guys who do online video, and those, because they are regulated, they are part of us, they should also, the reading should also, the text should also be inclusive of them. And we are also the view that the definition of publication needs to be amended as follows, that by amending in the Act subsection A of the definition currently contained in the Act such that it reads as follows, a newspaper, magazine, book, periodical, pamphlet, poster, or other printed matter. And by further amending the proposed subsection I of the definition proposed in the FPA being such that it is as follows, any website, social media, message or communication, including an audio, visual, or audio-visual that is including video, presentation, whether it's live stream, print or otherwise, placed on any distributed network, including but not confined to the internet. And lastly, the last point I want to make is that in our view, these are fairly straightforward amendments that bring all of the publication that is inclusive of hard or soft copy newspaper, hard or soft copy magazine, as well as online content of a member of the Press Council of South Africa, print broadcasting online, within the exemption provided for in Section 16 of the Act, having to be classified under the Act itself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, I was trying to check in your submission the proposals that you are reading. Because you made a submission much earlier.
Yes, sir.
And what you are reading is in your submission.
Yes. Yes.
So that was something that we have to get something else. The proposals are there in their presentation. Does the summit presentation very short and to the point with proposals? Any questions? If there are none, thank you very much. Sometimes I know how you feel. Sometimes flying 2 hours from Dubai to here, make a presentation of 10-15 minutes, no questions. So unfortunately, I do in for other letters. I have you seen it on the phone. It has been like all. Honorable Funda?
So that makes it just worthwhile. Okay, so how would you propose a summit that media is dealt with that isn't registered to the Press Council because it's voluntary registration?
So how would you propose that digital assets that are linked to internet applications are not part of the test control system does it?
In other words, I'd say the head would have to be authorized and clear and harsh on those people, because we've got industry bodies like your IAB, we've got the press council, and we always encourage people that they should come and fall under the ambit of the press council, so that the regulation is kept tight, so as we as the press council, we know who we're dealing with, and we don't have people running amok and doing everything. Hence the press council is there, hence we say anyone who falls outside the ambit and doesn't want to entertain being part of being members of the press council, the act should then be dealing harsh with such people.
Thank you. Thank you very much, SG. See you next time. Next will be National Association of Broadcasters, Advocates, Democrats, so Cosa.
Services. We've got all commercial registrations, we've got the major labels or brands in the regional environment. We're Primedia, Capital Media, Tia Group. We also represent radio stations that stand alone, which are in the like of Kaya, Traffic, as well as YFM. We've got all licensed commercial television broadcasters, E-Multi-Choice, NX, as well as StarSet as our members. We've got the key external distributors as well as our members, Incentive as well as Oticom. And we've got a variety chair of associate members as well for the Hashtag Energy membership. So basically, Chair, I think today I'm going to be representing the broad voice of what doctors are saying. And I think we do not take for granted the fact that we are actually giving the last advice of the chair. We actually appreciate it because it's going to be a sum up of what the government is saying over the 2 years. Chairman, by way of background, I think this slide self-explanatory, it outlines the issue that our position is covering. And Chair, really, we do welcome this opportunity. We had an opportunity to speak in the oil and this submission we have submitted. And we again welcome this opportunity. We do not take it lightly. And Chair, in order to avoid, you know, repeating what you said, we're just going to be highlighting critical issues that emanate from our submission. And we believe that the portfolio committee will, in addition to its presentation, read our existing submission. And we also just want to reiterate, Chair, that we support a constitutional argument that our members have raised. ETV was very elaborate in that yesterday. But we also just want to align ourselves, Chair, with regards to the other arguments that have been raised by the lack of ISPA, where they try to demonstrate the level of difficulty that the ATV may be faced with in terms of trying to regulate online content, mainly because of the traffic that goes on the internet on second basis, not just on an hour, but even on the second basis. So we believe that it's an enormous task that the ATV is being faced with. Chairperson, by all means, AAB and its members have said this before, we support the protection of children from harmful content, and I think this is also very clear from the memorandum of the FTD, of the bill which stipulates that the objective is to protect children from harmful content. We support the rapid policy and regulatory responses to technological advances. The proposed amendments are, however, far-reaching to assessing the five-year consent, as we've already indicated, that trying to regulate the net and indeed the mammoth task for the FTD. And in the process, so what you realize is that the fact that bill is attempting to introduce certain terms, which are unfortunately not defined in the bill. And I think when looking at the bill, you actually realize that the term streaming is actually defined in terms of what is not. So we think that it's a very problematic term which is introduced in the bill, but we believe that regard must be had to other inputs that have emanated from other agencies in terms of how this definition should be couched. So we would like to encourage the portfolio committee to relook into the definition of streaming. Chair, unfortunately, we're going to be over-labored in the issues, particularly around the constitutional concerns. And just to make a correction, Chair, I also said this at the beginning. So members who've got printed presentations on this very slide, the typographic error, the very top point is section 18.7, then section 18.8, and then 18.9. So if you could just in that correction for us, and we beg your pardon, Chair, for the error. So basically, Chair, these three clauses are the problematic clauses in terms of the bill. We demonstrate in summary that section clause 18.7, 8, and 9 basically limits constitutional rights that the broadcasters have. Summary just outlines the fact that it limits the exemption afforded broadcasting licenses in terms of section 18.6. We know that in terms of the current act, there is an exemption afforded by 18.6, which exempts broadcasters from the application of the Student Publications Act. But also one pragmatic issue, Chair, that we've got with 18.8 in particular is the fact that it instructs authority CASA not to renew a license of a broadcasting licensee who also stream content. We see this very problematic, Chair. In our view, these provisions are out of arrest and in violation of the provisions of the Constitution. We repeatedly
outlined what Section 192 of the Constitution says, but just for clarity, I would like to read again for this Congress to say that Section 192 of the Constitution stipulates national legislation must establish an independent authority to regulate broadcasting the public interest and to ensure fairness and diversity of views both to representing the South African society. So, Chair, we have also had repeatedly that in order to give an effect to the provisions of 192 of the Constitution, then the ICASA Act was enacted, and it gives the act that stipulates that ICASA shall be that independent regulatory body. But also when you look at Section 3 as well of the ICASA Act, it stipulates that the authority is independent and subject only to the Constitution and the law and must be impartial and must perform its functions without fear of favor or prejudice. We therefore just want to implore to the committee here to say that we therefore believe that Section Clause 18.7 of the bill should be struck out of the bill in its entirety because we believe that it is ultra-virus. And I think in this slide, Chair, that we will now try to provide some remedial action in terms of how this anomaly that you are detecting should be handled. And what you think, Chair, is the existing Section 18.6 of the Content Publications Act must be strengthened to recognize that even content of broadcasters that have already, that have been already been classified and then broadcast online should also be regarded as broadcasting content and should enjoy the same type of exemption. We have a draft suggestion, Chair, there for the attention of the committee. Another clause, Chair, which has also been discussed around in this room today, since yesterday, Chair, is the provisions of Section 18.7 again, Clause 18.7 again, which also has a different bearing because we regard it to also be in violation of Section 15 of the Constitution, which seeks to protect the freedom of expression, and Section 16.8 of the Constitution reads everyone has the right to freedom of expression, which includes freedom of the press and other media, freedom to receive and impart information or ideas. But in addition to that, Chair, there was a recognition by the Electronic Communications Act to, protect broadcasters from any form of editorial interference. When you look at the provisions of Section 53.2, it specifically outlines that the supremacy of the authority does not have the power to interfere in editorial independence. And I would like to repeat as well the provisions of Section 52.2, which states nothing in this Act may be construed as requiring or authorizing authority or the Communication Compliance Commission in the performance of its functions to view programs prior to their being broadcast. So, say if the CCC was empowered to be programming before it broadcasted, then that would amount to a preliminary censorship. So then the ECA also does recognize that. And, Chair, we have had repeatedly that there has also been some case law in terms of trying to deal with the unconstitutional provision of the Films and Publications Act. And we've had what was held in the case of the PTMSA, that was the Minister of Home Affairs, which was the 2012 CRM ruling, which basically seeks to strike down the provisions of 1660 of the FTA, mainly because of its unconstitutionality. We therefore chair propose that Section 1877 of the clause is deleted. One of the items, Chair, that we'd like to run into is the issue around current classification. We would like to applaud the portfolio committee for having inserted a clause that recognizes the accreditation of foreign classification bodies. But one lack or deficit that we've identified about this clause here is the fact that it does not necessarily outline the processes and procedures or the mechanisms that can be applied in terms of accrediting these different classifications. And we believe, Chair, that this issue can be dealt by way of regulation. We believe that the FTG might be empowered to prescribe regulations which will lay out in terms of how the foreign classification mechanisms can be held. But we also would encourage the world in empowering the FTB to also encourage it also to look into issues of reciprocity. Mark Chen has deliberated very and has dealt very deliberately on this and brought you this issue. and we just want to reiterate the position, Chair. Just by way of memory, just to remind this committee and also maybe to even congratulate the SED for having at one point, I mean, this was last year in March, when they published what was called the Online Content Policy Regulation. Like all the interested parties, we participate in the process. But what you are encouraged here about is the fact that this process has been solved. Up until this bill, you know, has been passed as well because we understand the fact that the regulation will not be passing in the absence of an policy. So we just want to applaud, you know, even encourage the Department of Communication channels of allowing this bill process to run its course, and then, you know, issue on online policy regulations and then be revisited thereafter. Having said that, I would like to hand over to my chairperson to make his closing remarks.
Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity and come back to the energy to REPO. I think what you're saying, in summary, one, is that if the bill can be legally compliant, that's just one consideration. Secondly, if the bill can be practical and implementable. Thirdly, we are saying, can it be applied to the relevant, you know, entities or individuals? Broadcasters are over-regulated. And I must conclude by saying, it sounds like you are the regular taxpayer, but you are the one targeted, and there's somebody more rosy who is not even registered. It sounds as if it's like more to, you know, show for the one you who is already registered and paying tax. And with that, Mr. Chair, we'd like to thank you for the patience, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any papers? Somebody is just coughing, but it's very, very clear. And I agree with that, it's very, very clear. Then there are no questions for you, ma'am. So thank you very much, it was very clear.
Okay.
Now I understand why you were so perplexed. Thank you very much. We have now, we are now done with a number of presentations. We are left before we, not four, we are left with three. And we don't have lunch yet. Then we can continue until there is indication lunch. Google SA. Google SA. Are they here? Media Monitor in Africa and SOS Coalition? Are they here? Center for Constitutional Rights?
Yes.
Google SA must be here. Why are they here? Yeah, no, I think we must push until there is education. There is lunch. And then we can pray for lunch and then go to our thing. Parliament is sitting and pray today. Over to you, Google. I hope you also teach us how to cook. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I will pass you a few runs for the lesson. Communications and stakeholders in the sector.
good afternoon, and thank you so much for affording us this opportunity. I think technology is failing us. It's quite ironic. It should happen with Google presenting. I'm just thinking that the time.
What is that?
Can I see that? Okay. Sorry. The reason why I really wanted this up there is because my presentation is very pictorial. So I really wanted to put this up there. I'll start. Okay. Just go to you. So I just want to start with a we'll take it offline. my presentation is going to look at two parts. It's really going to be divided into two parts. The first part that I want to talk about is I just want to talk about the internet in general, and I also want to talk about specifically our products and services that we offer here in South Africa and globally. But also, more importantly, I'm going to go at length to show some of the tools and resources that we actually have that are built into products and services that actually show, I hope they'll actually show to members here present, that platform providers such as ourselves have gone to length to actually build in some resources for users to use, to apply, to make sure that especially children are able to use these services in a safe and responsible manner. I know for most people, the internet sounds like a wild west. It's quite a huge medium, but there's quite a lot in terms of innovation as well that platform providers have put in order for you to understand and sort of allay any fears that people might have that the internet is generally unregulated. So I want to start first with this slide. I understand from yesterday, Ispa had sort of a similar slide that they shared with us. This slide, I just want to talk about the sheer size of the internet. And the statistics that I'm sharing here are just for Google only. I haven't even begun to talk about other platform providers. We've got up to 6 million web pages online, with millions added every minute, more than 159 languages right now. And when you talk about our platform downloading apps, which is the Play Store, we've got up to 35,000 apps uploaded every single day. And when it comes to video, especially on YouTube, these statistics keep changing almost every month. Right now, we've got up to 650 hours of YouTube video uploaded every single minute. So every single minute that I've been talking, 650 hours have been uploaded. It's huge. It's not a joke. And that's just up to around 6 billion hours worth a month, as well as on our test platform, up to 100 billion searches a month. So it's huge. It's a sheer just mass of it. It's just, it could be intimidating. And I'm glad to see that the multi-choice presentation as well also updated to this, and also compared to sort of the volume that FTV currently deals with in terms of the offline titles. In terms of our mission, I know this is not a very popular mission, personally, but to us, it's something that's not very dear. Our mission is very simple. It sounds very grand. It is to organize world information and make it universally accessible and useful. We take this mission very seriously internally at Google, and we do this in a various sort of ways, from offering products, most of them online products, but some are beginning to be offline. I just managed to put in grep and put in as many icons as they like with of some of the products that we offer. Some of you guys may know them, some may not know them, but there's quite a lot that we are dealing with. And while we are executing our mission, we are also aware of the huge responsibility that is on our shoulders as we try to organize this information and make it accessible we are aware, for example, that some information may not be entirely palatable, some information may not be entirely appropriate for young users. So we are very careful about how we make that sort of information available, especially information that's not appropriate for young users. So we've got an approach, a three-pronged approach when it comes to child protection online. And that three-pronged approach looks at empowerment and protection and education. I'm going to break this down a bit later as I show you some of the tools. But basically we want to empower especially caregivers and parents and people that look after young kids with the tools that they need in order to make sure that their kids can access the internet responsibly. We also seek to protect, and in this we cooperate with government around the world, with law enforcement and non-profit and civil society partners in order to protect kids. And more importantly, and I'll emphasize this issue again later, we seek to educate the children themselves about how they can effectively use the internet in a responsible manner. So the first part I'd like to talk about is some of the resources and tools that we have built into our product. This is not just a marketing pitch, but I think it's important in the view of the fact that some of the reasoning that we've seen when legislation has been proposed is that there is no regulation, people don't want to be regulated or something like that. This is really not true. So it's kind of like that we are doing ourselves even before this amendment came into being. I'm going to start first with Google Search. I know and I hope that Google Search is your first protocol for most of you when you go online. And because it's that, it can also be the first protocol for children, which means that it could be a gateway for them to access content that is not appropriate for their age. So what do we do with the Search product? We've got a tool which is called Search Search. I think it's really unfortunate that we don't communicate so well about some of the tools that we have because they are very effective. If you go on your search page on the right hand side, click on that wheel, that menu comes down there. If you click on turn on search search, you actually have the capability to lock that using your own password. So for example, if you do this on a computer that is at home, what it means is that whoever then comes to search online on Google is going to get age-appropriate results. So what Facebook simply does is to remove adult content. So should a child, for example, try to come and search pornography, at least via online, via Google, they are not going to find it that way. So it's a very effective tool. We've seen many schools around the world that are using it in their labs, and so they just go to the server and enable it. So anyone in the school can now access Google, but they won't be able to go on to see pornography in this way. So it's a very effective tool, and I've done several live demonstrations of it, and I'm glad to say it worked very well. The same thing applies to YouTube. YouTube right now is, I think, one of the biggest search engines. It's even growing faster than Google. You won't believe it. And because people are watching quite a lot of video, as I said, there's 606 hours of video uploaded every minute. So even on YouTube, we do have a facility to enable what we call a YouTube 60 mod. You just scroll down to the bottom of the page of your YouTube and the graphic illustrates. You will see there it says page 3. The default is off, so all you need to do is to turn on. And once you turn it on, you can log into your password. And what we always tell parents is that a password like 1, 2, 3 or your birthday will not work because kids are always going to be able to, you know, get that. It's very important, especially for parents to know that their children's safety actually begins with them. They have to take these things seriously and not just keep kids' devices and they, you know, just do it. That's very important. So the other thing that we do on the state page is that we partner with non-profits where we give them resources in terms of funding where they can target specific kind of searches. So if we believe that someone is searching for content that may be related to child pornography, we've got an advert like this which comes up. It's a warning which says, basically says what you're about to search for may actually be illegal. And then if you fail you to, let's say, the local police station, if you want to report, let's say, instances of illegal content. So what happens is that this warning pops up, and then what we have seen in the background is that one in five such churches actually stop. They don't proceed to go into sexual content. So you know that it's effective in some way. Yesterday we did talk about the issue of revenge porn. We also have a tool. If you Google right now, removing permission from Google, this page should be the first one. The link to this page should be the first one that comes to you. This is an opportunity for someone who has been involved in what we call revenge pornography. They can actually go here online and report that thing and Google is able to take down those images. So there are facilities for people to seek revenge online. I think the issue is that we're not doing maybe a good job of communicating it. That's the list of our other platforms where you're also allowed, where you've got capability of actually removing content that is distasteful. Also on our browser, we've got a facility which allows, let's say, a parent to block or whitelist or blacklist specific websites. Very simple to create a profile for another user, especially if they are a child, just specify that they are a child. This user will be able to use the internet very freely and safely, and will not be able to visit unpalatable websites, so to speak. On the Play Store, where people download applications, I'm happy to say that all our applications are actually located and classified. We use an international system, which I'll come to later, which rate all our applications as they are uploaded, as many as they are. So it's very important to know that we do care about some of these things. And in particular in South Africa, we've been in discussions with the FCC for a long time now, where we're actually applying FCC ratings. But we have made the point, actually, that the rating system that we've been using are international ones. And if you really compare them, ours are much stricter than what the FCC actually uses. The example of health care, which shows how it is rated around the world, is precisely that we use a global system which is actually much stricter. So the other issue that I want to talk about is the issue of flagging, because I know YouTube is quite a huge thing. But before I talk about flagging, I want to talk about number three there, which is called hashing technology. Hashing technology is a technology we use to put a digital fingerprint into an image or a video. Let's say there's been a video or an image which involves children in a sexual manner. What we simply do is that we put a digital fingerprint to that image or that piece of content so that wherever it surfaces, our system takes it down or they don't at least surface it on Google search. So even if we now decide to call it by a different name, the fact that we have digitally imprinted it is that wherever you put it, whether via emails or via drive or once you upload to your website, we are going to identify that and report it to the police. The other very important thing, the tool that I want to talk about that people don't use quite a lot is that of flagging. So on YouTube, as I say, it's like a huge amount of content coming. But we've got a system where you can actually flag some content. If right now you go to YouTube and you see a video that you think that you do not agree with, based on maybe you feel it's hate speech or it's age appropriate and stuff like that, you actually have a facility where you can flag it, and by clicking on that flag you can report it to us. And for people that are working 24 hours, 7 hours a day, around the clock, to actually respond to those flags. As you click on it, you're going to get that dialogue will actually ask you what you want to report this video for. So it makes it quite easy for you to report the video. Is it for terrorism, is it for abuse, people for hateful content, is it for child abuse, and so on and so forth. And then there are people that are going to excel it. We receive, I think, close to 20,000 flags a day, and we attend almost all of those as soon as we can. So there is just the flow of how we should flag. Last year, 2016, we took down 14 million videos from flagging alone. On our own volition, without anyone coming to say this is a lot, take it down. So it shows that there is a system in this, in the government, and it's actually working. So some of the results, let's say someone flagged a piece of content, we then have to make a decision if this piece of content needs to be age gated. By age gating, we mean it could involve a sexual film. For example, YouTube, we do not allow pornography, so there's no pornography on YouTube. But there could be some video which may be sexually tempting and stuff like that, and we feel that a young person should not be doing this. So what we do is we put it behind the gate. If you click on it, you're going to get that warning that the content is not for younger viewers. Please confirm your age. So you cannot go on to view it until you sign in. By signing in, you're actually letting us know your age, and then we can go ahead and make you view it. But if you're young, you're not going to see this video. The same thing applies to what we call candidating. There is some content which would be legal in South Africa and some content which is illegal in South Africa. In also, the best example is, for example, we know that with some Muslim countries, they don't allow a video depicting the Prophet Muhammad. So those videos are illegal there. So what we do is that we make sure that in those countries, they are not shown. But if you go also in another country, you're able to see. So this is really just to demonstrate the dynamism of the system and how responsive it is. And one of the main challenges that we've been facing, I think, in the past year or two, as everyone, especially broadcasters, know, is the rise of terrorism. And terrorism, obviously, you know, videos that are meant to shock and disgust and scare people are obviously not allowed on the channel. But the system is very dynamic. We make sure that if it's a video that is for content, it's a news report, it's going to be shown. But if it's a plain video that's meant to shock people just to show your behavior for no apparent reason, obviously that is not going to make it to our platform. So we take this thing seriously, and we've come up with a program called Trusted Flagger, where we work especially with nonprofits and in some areas with government agencies. Trusted Flagger is simply a flagging system on steroids. It allows you to flag as many videos as possible. We take you through curriculum, we train you so that you know how to use it, so that you know how to report content. And then once you've got that badge as a trusted flagger, what then happens is that whenever content, a flag comes from you, we prioritize it, we skip the queue and attend it to, because we're sure that once you are flagging, a trusted flagger is flagging, it's a testament to something. So we encourage non-profits here in South Africa, as well as our government agencies, such as the FED, to actually join this program and be able to establish content and report and help us take down content that is unacceptable. The second aspect of it is our legal policies. So what I have shown is that we do not proactively take down content because it's impossible. So if you look at a platform like YouTube, it really is going to be impossible to proactively view all the videos before they are uploaded. It's like equivalent of asking a telecom to screen all the calls before they happen. You actually don't know what's going to happen in that call, and you don't want to be listening into people's conversations. But we've got a system, and that system is based on what we call community guidelines. We've got close to 1 billion users every month on YouTube, and we've got these community guidelines that tell people how to act on YouTube. Basically, they say, this is what you can do, this is not what you can do. This slide just goes a bit deeper into what we mean by community guidelines. It really goes and tells people, for example, do not post nudity, do not post hateful content, do not harass other people online, guidelines on hate speech, discrimination of minorities. In fact, if you read these community guidelines, I have been asked before, how did Google develop them? We've got an independent committee that looks into this and makes sure that they are updated regularly. But if you really look at this guidelines, there is nothing anyone can really disagree with. For example, on discrimination of minorities and discrimination of people based on gender or race and stuff like that. It's generally a good principle that we even find in preambles of most constitutions that actually make up our community guidelines. So this is how they would look like. We also have a specific messages for teenagers on how they can be safe online, including addressing specific issues such as harassment and cyberbullying. All curriculum there for teen safety. The third aspect of our process protecting children online is that of digital literacy. And we really implore members of the committee here to seriously look into this issue as we are doing education in South Africa, that we look at the issue of digital literacy because we believe this is where the impact is going to be. We need to teach the young users how to use the internet responsibly. They've got rights, but they also have responsibilities. So their safety always starts with them. And we don't just talk, but we also walk the talk. I'm glad to see that my colleagues here in the monitoring are here, but we actually are running a digital literacy program with them and with human communication support and some other stakeholders. This program is basically looking at helping kids in school to be web rangers, you know, to be the ones that protect each other online. So we encourage, we'd like to see a bit more of such a program happening in schools. And yesterday the SAC also talked about the consumer protection program that we are running. So the more of this the merrier for us. And then my specific comments on the book, the SAC was presenting me yesterday. We're a member of the SAC, so most of the issues have already been raised. But there are a few specific issues that relate to us as Google that I want to point to. First of all, our submissions are based on international best practices. As a global company, we have exploited many sort of different pieces of legislation or different ways of dealing with issues. And we want to recommend that whenever we are dealing with legislation such as this, we must legislate for the future, and we must legislate with a global lens in mind, so that we make sure that we don't inconvenience either the South African user or investors that want to come and invest in South Africa. If we have laws that are detrimental to, let's say, freedom of expression, investors are not going to come to South Africa, and this may directly impact on some of our organizational development. So it's very important that we look at this issue in detail. So the submission, as I say, is focused on children. It is not to show off, but really to actually show members of the committee that there is quite a lot that platform providers are doing. So a few general observations on the bill. The first, and this issue cannot be delayed enough, there are a few instances within the bill that are potentially unconstitutional. We believe that this is not going to help the lawmaking process if we proceed with the bill as it is written, because it's not going to stand constitutional matter. So we really have to be careful, especially when we're talking about issues of breach notification as far as it relates to limiting freedom of expression. The other issue that we wish to raise is that the bill focuses too much on protection instead of empowerment. You know, the protectionist approach is an antithesis approach. You know, the big brother approach, you know what's there for you, therefore we're going to protect you. The modern approach to this is actually empowering people. Give them the tools, give them the knowledge so that they can make informed decisions. And, you know, the headline of the FPD is the informed choice. And I think we must put that into context. It's a perfect approach. Inform people so that they can make the informed decisions. The third issue that we want to outline is that the global standards and approaches. There are right now many countries that are going through similar things, and there are systems internationally that are working. We need to look into those. What the other countries have done, especially when it comes to classifying our countries in line, we've got international systems such as IRAC, the International AIDS Ratings Coalition, which is active in 120 countries. We need to look at those approaches and see how they can be applicable to South Africa. The fourth one is that there is clearly a disconnect between the bill and many other pieces of legislation that are already existing or that are in the pipeline. Our submission that we handed over goes more into this detail. But you can look at stuff like the online regulation policy, you can look at the cyber crime bill, you can look at the Electronic Transactions Act. There are many pieces of legislation where this bill seems to be blind to. And so we would submit that this committee looks a bit more into aligning it. The issue of terminology is by embrace this already. The current trend is that we don't call it child pornography. It's actually called child sexual abuse material. So we would like to see the bill also, you know, being up to date with the naming, because the naming of an issue is very important into how you actually deal with it. If you call it pornography, some people can say pornography is legal in South Africa, so I can consume it. But the moment you call it child sexual abuse material, you're actually saying it's illegal to stop it right there. One thing that's also missing in the bill and is that it doesn't seem to have a built-in process for participation. There are many sections in the bill that give power to the council, power to the ministry, to the minister in particular, to issue directives and stuff like that. We submit that it is good practice to build in some sort of public participation process into this bill. It's a golden opportunity that we have to grasp. And I'm saying this because in the past year or two, we had, for example, direct video regulations coming from the minister about fees payable and so on and so forth, and the public was not consulted. And this is where a lot of frictionness is beginning to happen. So it's very important that you get buy-in from the public in the beginning of policy formulation and up to implementation. This issue has already been discussed as well by multi-choice. It's the issue of the displaying of the FPP logo, where the amendment bill says it must be conspicuously displayed on the landing page or the website. It's a very outdated approach to this. It's an approach that is looking at limited titles, such as video on demand. It can apply to some products, but definitely for a product such as YouTube, it's actually not feasible. It will require quite a lot of re-engineering at a cost of millions of dollars on the part of Globe to actually start to do that. And it can cause a potential foreign investor such as Google to think we really need to be in South Africa. It can force them to make decisions based on that. So it's very important that we know some of these decisions or proposals have some potential cost impact and potential investment impact. Lessons section, the role of section 18 talks about the removal of content depicting violence against children. Again, we agree with this. We've got a zero tolerance towards any child sexual abuse material or violence against children. But what we worry about is that the bill seems to actually forget that there are systems right now within the Electronic Transactions Act, Electronic Communications Transactions Act, which determine how you take down content. The bill seems to assume that we know that the content was going to be put up. There's no way we're going to know that. But then there are systems that we wish could be followed and outlined in the ECTA. And remember that this act actually has afforded some intermediaries some limited sort of liability and protection. So it seems again that the bill is very fine to that effect. Again, section 18B talks about the issue of the prescribed fee. This issue really needs to be looked at again. And I think if we had built in some sort of public participation process, we wouldn't be having antagonism towards this issue. Potentially a figure of 800,000 rand per annum for a small distributor is the difference between being in business and out of business. So we really need to look into some of these things. Maybe for international players, they can pay, but for smaller players, potentially stifle innovation. And we also welcome the mention of international rating system in the bill, but we want the bill to be a bit more specific as well as to outline which rating system will be allowed in South Africa and what processes are these going to be allowed. And we also want the bill to outline and to acknowledge self-certification. That is what I've been trying to show you. And also on the issue of fees, we need clarity on the matter of so, for example, if a company like Google is already a member of the International Age Restricted Coalition, we pay a license fee so that they classify our content. And then we still need to pay a license fee for South Africa to the FPP. So potentially there's the issue of double taxation there. We need that to be looked at. What I want to mention here, in terms of user-generated content as well, there seems to be this disconnect between what the online regulation policy says, because it's very clear, the online regulation policy seems to be clear that user-generated content is difficult or is impossible to regulate, so they're going to rely on the systems that platform providers have, but the bill seems to take us back there. So we'd like to see an alignment of that system. Again, here the issue that I want to emphasize is on complaints and taking down of content. We want to emphasize that there should be good processes before content is taken down. And we also want to understand if really the FPP should be the one seeking the criminal charges, or they should be reporting to law enforcement bodies such as the SAPS. So we need a bit more clarity on that issue. Overall, in terms of the conclusion, I think the objects of the bill are very commendable. These are issues that are dear to us and they are dear to parents and users and everyone else.
But there are a few things that really need to be looked into so that this bill can pass the constitutional mandate and that it could help you in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't think you invited.
Okay, there's my name then. My name is sorry, sir. I think it was the technology problem we had that sort of put me off. So my name is Fortune Sibanda. I'm a public policy manager at Sulu in South Africa, but based in Johannesburg, South Africa.
That's
yes, it belongs very soon.
Yes,
that's a long story, partnership.
No, we don't know the story. Thanks, Mr. Mkwili Sibanda. We're a bit stuck. We don't have lunch, or it looks like we do have. Maybe let's grab lunch and come back in the heads with the issues that you have. We'll adjourn now. My watch says 10:01. Can I come back at 22? Is that too long?
Half past one.
Thank you very much. Half past one, we're back here. Lunch is outside. Thanks.
Nothing. Thank you.